Use the flag to slide safely down to ground level. On the way down, he witnessed Tungdil and Lot Ionan talking together. He could not hear what they were saying because he was too far away, but they were standing face to face, neither attacking the other. What did it mean? Tungdil leaped forward and swept Bloodthirster at the Magus, who laughed as he made a gesture that had the dwarf suddenly enveloped by one of the flags. Then he reached out at full stretch to land a blow on Tungdil with his staff. Hardly had the onyx stone touched the embroidered material than the fabric turned into a gigantic snake, wrapping its coils around Tungdil's body. Muscles worked feverishly, and the armor creaked in protest, but the dwarf was unable to move. Balindar was on the ground by this time, and rushed over toward Lot Ionan, keen fire at the ready. The diamonds and inlay pattern shone with inner fire, and the heat it gave out was like being in a forge. Bald-headed Lot Ionan saw him coming, and turned to face him.
"So what are the children of the smith doing, coming to the aid of the Alphar?"
The ends of his beard waggled, and the sharp-featured face was an uncanny picture of malice.
"We're not here on their behalf."
Balindar leaped at the Magus, swinging Keenfire in a powerful stroke. Lot Ionan did not have to know that he only intended to hit him with the flat side of the weapon. The Magus sidestepped with surprising agility, raising his own staff to strike Balindar. Keenfire and Onyx clashed in midair. The explosion that ensued stunned and dazzled Balindar. He could hear a rattling sound as if pebbles were being dropped. Blinded, he stumbled forward under the impetus of his own attack and staggered into a pillar, which broke his fall. He ducked and whirled round, holding Keenfire in front of himself as protection. Gradually, his sight returned. Tungdil was still locked in the clutches of the enormous snake. Lot Ionan waved the remains of his broken staff accusingly in Balindar's direction. The top end had snapped off, and the onyx jewel lay in fragments around the throne.
"By Samusin!"
gasped the Magus, flinging the broken pieces at him.
"By Samusin!"
he shrieked in fury, lifting his arms.
"If only you were a mere stain in the ground, as I intended!"
Invisible powers must still have been issuing from the Magus, for the flagstones, the pillars, and everything near Balindar started to shake and move toward him.
"I shall squash you like squeezing a lemon, dwarf. Your bones will be ground to powder and be banished to eternal oblivion with the rest of the tower."
With a loud roar, Tungdil tore the snake in two with his bare hands, not needing Bloodthirster. He kicked the weapon up with his foot, catching it adroitly to go in for the attack. The quaking walls round Balindar ceased their movement. The young dwarf breathed a sigh of relief and threw himself on the Magus.
"For Girdlegard!"
But to his surprise, Tungdil ran past the wizard, heading instead straight for him. Iheart did not hesitate. Grim and stubborn, he ran full tilt at the Alf, not wasting a thought on the fact that a black arrow could strike at any second.
"Parry this if you can,"
he bawled, slamming his crow's beak down murderously, the spike targeting the Alf's left flank. Tirigan acted swiftly. He brought down his two-handed sword, plunging the tip into the earth, thus blocking the first attack. Then, supporting himself on his parrying stick, he dealt a two-footed kick into Ironheart's face. The dwarf staggered back, spitting blood. His nose was broken and already swelling up. He could see the white of the exposed bone. Two of his teeth were loose.
"You've made me bite my tongue," he raged at the elf. "It won't be your last injury."
Tirigan leaned on the parrying stick, staring at the flames engulfing the city.
"That destruction is hardly all down to you."
"I wish it was."
Ironheart came up to his adversary and feigned a strike at his head, but altered direction, aiming the flat edge of the crow's beak at the elf's right thigh. Tirigan took an evasive sidestep and placed a hand on his sword, pulling it to one side. Once more the dwarf weapon clashed on steel, and again the Alf launched a mighty kick, striking Ironheart in the neck. With a curse, Ironheart charged forward, landing on his knees in the dust.
"This is not a proper fight," he yelled angrily. "Come on, fight like a decent warrior."
"But I'm not fighting against a decent warrior, so why should I?"
the Alf returned scornfully, leaning on his tall sword.
"I always thought the famous Ironheart was an excellent fighter, but I'm disappointed to find him as lame as an orc."
He put his head on one side and winked.
"I'll grant you one wish. How would you like to die?"
Ironheart whirled the crow's beak.
"Drinking a beer, black eyes," he pushed forward. "As you don't have any beer with you, I'm safe."
This time he struck diagonally. Tirigan ducked and used the two-hander again to block the blow. But in his arrogance, he had underestimated the dwarf's furious strength. The blow thrust the elf back onto the ground, and, although the weapon itself did not strike him, the sharp end of his own parrying stick was forced right into his shoulder.
"I've got you!"
Ironheart followed through swiftly, striking at Tirigan and missing his head by the breadth of a beard hair. The elf executed a backwards somersault, intending to grab his two-hander, but the dwarf stamped on the sword, grinning. Tirigan grinned arrogantly back and drew out both his double daggers at the speed of light. The stabs ensued in a flowing movement. Ironheart saw the two arms with their four blades heading for him. He had to decide which to parry. He blocked one with his weapon haft, and the blade swished past his face. But the second knife hit him. The double blade did not penetrate the chainmail shirt, but the blow winded him badly. The next assault followed fast, and Ironheart tried to back away from Tirigan. The elf did not let up, but kept attacking with the daggers. Still with a smile on his finely chiseled features, he appeared not to have exerted himself at all. Ironheart's hands were cut, as was his face and every part of his body that was not covered in chainmail.
"You see? I'm out to cut you, not to kill you," the elf explained with a laugh. "Are you getting tired, dwarf? If you collapse and breathe your last before my very eyes, I shall watch carefully and store up the moment in my memory. I can use it in a picture or a drawing."
"You're only slashing at me because you are not fast enough to catch me properly, black eyes."
Ironheart had detected a pattern to the attacks.
"I know what you are going to do next. And anyway,"
he taunted, dodging the dagger thrust and plunging the spike of his crow's beak directly into the elf's belly,
"you won't be doing any more painting."
He tossed the paralyzed Tirigan onto his back and tore the weapon downwards in his flesh to widen the entry wound.
"Except in the dirt here, clawing with your fingers."
He levered the weapon out of the body cavity, tearing the guts. He studied the bloodied tip with satisfaction.
"You guys really aren't anything special. You're just big, that's all."
Ironheart kicked him viciously in the face, heard the bones crack, then spat at him.
"That's for breaking my nose."
Then he turned round. He stared at Slynn in horror. He was sitting up and aiming his crossbow at him. He had only pretended to be wounded.
"What?
I should have done this a long time ago," snarled the fourthling, and fired.
Keenfire and Bloodthirster clashed, sparks flying in all directions, fizzling against the dwarves and on the floor. Tungdil's weapon could not deny its origins as the sword of an unslayable. Any other blade would have shattered under the impact of Keenfire, but Bloodthirster stood up to the onslaught defiantly. The diamonds on the axe head increased their brilliance, infuriated not to be able to destroy Bloodthirster. Balindar felt that Tungdil surpassed him in physical strength several times over. He was being forced backwards against a pillar.
"You traitor!"
he screamed at the one-eyed dwarf, attempting to knee him in the groin.
"I always suspected you were closer to your foster father than you were to your own folk."
Tungdil kicked his knee away and head-butted him, sending his skull crashing back into the pillar. Balindar saw nothing but stars. The pressure on Keenfire lessened. Tungdil had moved away. Now his sight was clearing. The one-eyed dwarf stood in front of Lotionen as if wanting to protect him.
"Calm down," he said. "He has agreed to help us."
The fifthling shook his head to clear it.
"Help?"
He looked from Tungdil to the wizard and back again incredulously.
"Lotionen, who has suppressed the south of Girdlygard for many cycles and whose apprentices have wiped out the population in great swaths of the land, is going to help us? And of his own free will? He knows he can't defeat both of us."
Tungdil lowered Bloodthirster.
"To save himself pain and humiliation, he is prepared to accept my offer."
Balindar gulped.
"You sound like his spokesman, not his enemy."
It was hard to believe what he was hearing. Behind Lotionen, he suddenly made out a vague, slim shape moving.
"No, don't!" he shouted.
Tungdil and the Magus both turned. Koira stood behind them, her arms half raised, as she prepared a spell. Over her breast, her clothing hung in blood-soaked tatters, and the naked skin revealed below the garments was lighter in some places than in others. Even if nothing remained of the terrible wound, Balindar could see by looking at Koira's widened eyes that she had not recovered from the shock. She seemed determined Lotionen should pay for the injury inflicted on her. Could she have forgotten that their mission needed him alive?
"Do we really need him?"
The thought came flying into his mind from somewhere, and it started to take root. He looked at his magic axe, which had served so well against magi and monsters of all kinds.
Why would it not work against Tungdil Goldhand's master?
Tungdil looked at the young woman.
"Mega, stop whatever it is you are doing. No force is needed. He will come with us to the Black Abyss."
Koira's lips were moving. Her palms glowed red, and a beam 3 fingers wide was released, hissing toward Lotionen, who held out an arm. The hand turned upwards, pointing at the ceiling. The beam collided with the palm of his hand and dissipated, with smaller rays diverted in all directions. And so the duel ended.
And that was how she was planning to vanquish him?
Given this pitiful performance on the part of the Maga, Balindar was glad that they had settled the matter without her help. Tungdil changed position and came to stand between Koira and Lotionen. Balindar went up to her.
"Can you hear me, Majesty?"
he asked gently, holding Keenfire so that he could use it to defend himself against a spell. The young woman lowered her head until she could look him directly in the eyes.
"I nearly died,"
she declared blankly, and he could see fresh blood on her lips.
"I nearly died, but,"
she looked down at herself,
"I am not decent. The elf tore off my clothes and,"
Koira sobbed,
"I have failed against Lotionen because I used up my magic to heal myself."
She buried her face in her hands, weeping hysterically. Her words were for the most part unintelligible, but the name Sisseroth occurred again and again. Balindar looked helplessly at Tungdil.
"What's wrong with her? What would be wrong with her, do you think? Death had her in its hands, and she was in pain great enough to unman any stout warrior and make him lose his senses."
The one-eyed dwarf put Bloodthirster away.
"It may be a long time before her mind recovers. Or maybe it never will."
Balindar watched her sadly. Taking her in his arms to offer consolation would not be right for him, and not only because of the difference in their heights.
"All the more vital that we have Lotionen."
Tungdil bent down to pick up one of the splinters from the onyx jewel.
"You broke his staff. That weakens him, he tells me, but he is still capable of creating powerful spells.
Balindar studied the Magus. The man was not looking at him, and his eyes were wandering past him as if he were some trivial object.
"Can't he speak for himself?"
"Not with you or any other. He does not consider you to be of equal status."
"But you are?"
Balindar's retort was louder than he had intended and more scornful.
"I am his foster son.
If we want to know something, we have to speak through you."
Balindar could not grasp it. Tungdil had found yet another way to make all of them dependent on him, dwarfs and Girdligarders alike. The one-eyed dwarf nodded.
"Exactly. I don't like it either, but that's the way he wants it."
"He wants it?" Balindar laughed outright. "It's not up to him to want it. He is our prisoner."
"He surrendered voluntarily. It's different."
"Then let's make him our prisoner." Balindar swung Keenfire. "I can knock him down. This weapon gives me the power, and he won't be able to do anything to defend himself."
Tungdil was angry now.
"You know that is not true. He could have you buried under the collapsing tower, and Keenfire would have to let it happen."
"But..."
Tungdil took a step toward him.
"Control yourself, Balindar Steelfinger. You are an excellent warrior with a legendary weapon, but I am the High King. Do what I tell you, or I will give you a lesson in respect. And by all that is infamous, I will do it."
He looked at the doorway. "We have not finished here. The elf Sisseroth has got away. He nearly robbed us of our Maga." He marched off. Lotionen followed him, not even glancing at Balindar. Balindar went up to Koira and touched her arm.
"Forgive me, Majesty, but we must leave," he told her gently.
She wiped her face on her sleeve to dry her tears, then smiled bravely and followed the others. As she went, her eyes searched the dark corners of the hall in fear. Balindar noticed that she stayed very close to him. She was terribly afraid of the elf who had escaped. In a state of high alert, they left the throne room where, until recently, Aeferton had resided. That was all in the past, like the Cordrian, like the dragon Lohasbrand and his vassals. Balindar thought Lotionen's name would fit nicely in the list of dead monsters. While the group made their way down the stairs, he placed his right hand on the Sigurdacia wood handle. He would ensure the Magus did not return alive to Girdligard after the battle at the Black Abyss. Balindar could see Lotionen's bald head in front of him. There were such stories about him. The originally affable Magus had turned into an evil despot, whose cruel deeds and indifference to the suffering of others were well known, and he had practically annihilated the entire tribe of the secondling dwarves. This thought alone was enough to bring Balindar's rage to boiling point, making him snort with fury. He did not believe now, and would not in 100 cycles ever believe, that Lotionen had joined forces with them without having evil in mind.
"He and Tungdil have come up with a plot."
Perhaps they had decided to split Girdligard between the two of them. What he would have given to have been able to overhear those negotiations. Lost in thought, he was suddenly made aware by Keenfire that an ambush threatened. The inlay pattern flared up and Balindar whirled round with a shout, the axe lifted ready to strike dead the elf who had crept up on him.
"May Teon take you!"
But nobody was there. A sharp pain burned its way down through his shoulder. Balindar dropped to the floor, thus freeing his body from the sword that had skewered him. He rolled onto his back just in time to see the second thrust coming and to avert it with his own axe. The sword tip clattered onto the basalt floor tiles, leaving a furrow in the stone. Sisseroth was suspended above him. The elf had braced his feet against two of the ceiling arches on the stairway and had been lying in wait there like a falcon. Now he sprang down to land behind Balindar, stabbing over the top of him at the Magus retreating back and injuring her afresh. Then he dragged his long sword downwards. Koira stumbled and fell. Quickly, the dwarf moved to avoid the blade slicing into his flesh, but the parrying stick stabbed him painfully under the collarbone. With a growl, he hefted Keenfire upwards, but Sisseroth dodged the blade and kicked Balindar's hands, so that he almost lost his grip on his weapon. There was a crack. Some bone somewhere had fractured, but as yet he felt nothing. The wound in his shoulder hurt too badly for him to be aware of any other pain. In spite of his many injuries, he is lethal and he is fast. Confounded creature! The elf took two swift steps and sprang up against the wall to run up along the ceiling to attack Lot Ionan. Tungdil and the Magus had been alerted by the sound of fighting, and the Magus' scream as she collapsed on the stairs. But Koira had fallen against Lot Ionan, knocking him off balance. Fortunately, this caused Sisseroth's attack to fail, otherwise the blade would have struck the Magus on the head. Tungdil parried the first blow with a swift movement, then Sisseroth landed in front of him and thrust at him again. Tungdil arrested the blow just above his head, kept his weapon raised and approached the elf. The raucous scrape of metal on metal as the blades met made Balindar's hair stand on end. Sisseroth dodged the charging dwarf, taking two steps to the right and then to the left, planning to run up to the ceiling again, but Tungdil speared his wounded leg with an upward stroke that took him by surprise. Blood flowed out of the gaping wound, where the bone was now exposed. With a shout, Sisseroth fell on the basalt stairs and lost his sword. The dwarf expedited the weapon down the stairs with a hefty kick. The elf was far from having given up. He hurled the first of his double daggers at the one-eyed dwarf, but the magic decorations on the armor blazed out, and the weapon was stopped in mid-flight before it could touch the Tionium. It fell harmlessly onto the stone floor. Sisseroth had already drawn his second dagger, but was hesitating. The sight of Tungdil's armor seemed to distract him, or bring home to him, perhaps, that this was a foe he would not be able to defeat. But then he gave a sudden laugh and spoke an incantation in his own language. The runes flared one after another, and Tungdil, who had been about to attack the elf, froze like a statue and fell. He rolled down the stairs with a terrible clatter, keeping tight hold of Bloodthirster and making no attempt to save himself. Sisseroth was still laughing and turned, knife in hand, to Lot Ionan.
Who would have thought the tide would turn?
The Magus, bleeding from a wound on his brow from when he had hit the wall after colliding with Koira, found himself hampered by the veil of blood. Balindar clenched his teeth and gathered himself for a mighty throw. Keenfire started its arced flight and went straight at the elf. Ireheart saw the bolt flying toward him and could not believe his eyes. There was no time to react. The shot was upon him and missed his left eye socket by a finger's width. The dwarf heard it whir and felt the wind of its passing. Then it thudded home behind him. Ireheart knew what that meant. He ducked down, twirling round, his crow's beak held at head height. He saw the arm with the double-bladed knife swipe above his head, and then his own metal spike thudded deep into Tirigan's left side.
"It's time you knew when to give up and die, Black Eyes," he yelled at the elf, in whose heart the crossbow bolt was buried.
Without a sound, Tirigan fell to his knees and tipped on his side.
"I'm not taking any chances this time," growled Ireheart, hammering the elf's skull flat with the crow's beak.
He dragged the corpse to the edge of the crater and tossed it over.
"Have a good flight."
He watched as the body fell 3 miles down, bashing against the rocks on the way before crashing into the ground. No one could survive a fall such as that.
"At last!"
he heard the relief in Rodario's voice. The actor was hanging from his badly bent sword, which had got stuck in a cleft in the rocks. He had rammed it into a crevice as he fell, thus saving himself.
"Ho! And what have you done with your horse?"
Ironheart had to ask, grinning in spite of himself.
Why didn't you grab hold of it with those long legs of yours?
Ironheart, I need your help, Slynn called. Melania's badly hurt. We have to bandage her. He looked down to where Rodario hung.
The sword will hold for a bit. I have to look to your darling girl, he shouted, and rushed off to the Fourthling, who was kneeling at the woman's side, assessing her injuries.
Ironheart could see that she was still breathing. The arrow in her neck might have cut through flesh and sinews, but, to judge from the bleeding, it had not touched an artery. He was more worried about the arrow in her back.
There's nothing we can do except try to keep her alive until Koira comes back to heal her magically, he told Slynn, helping him to apply bandaging. Keep talking to keep her awake. I'll see what I can do for the actor before the steel snaps and he follows Black Eyes down into the crater.
He put his hand on the Fourthling's shoulder.
Thank you. I'm in your debt.
No, you're not, said Slynn. We're a group, and everyone looks after everyone else. He hesitated. At least, we children of the Smith must always try to.
You're right.
Ironheart stood up and took the horse's reins, knotting them together to make a long rope. While he was doing so, Baladil came over. He had bandaged his own injured arm. Tossing a drinking flask to Ironheart, he said, The owner won't be needing this anymore.
But you will.
Then he sat down and, in spite of his injury, helped Ironheart tie the reins together. They walked over to the edge and lowered the leather rope down to Rodario, who was swinging to and fro in the breeze.
High time, he greeted the dwarves. I can't hold on much longer.
If you had kept the horse between your knees, it would have been harder still. Catch hold, called Ironheart. We'll pull you up.
Baladil and Ironheart managed to liberate Rodario from his precarious situation. The actor was able also to save his bent sword, having yanked it out of the crevice.
What will you use that for? Wondered Ironheart. Attacking round corners?
I'll keep it, as a souvenir. Rodario went pale when he saw Melania on the ground. He ran over and cushioned her head on his knee.
We must do something, he said in desperation.
We can only wait, said Ironheart. The injury is too grave, and none of us is a healer. We need the Maegar to come and close up the wounds.
Rodario swallowed hard and nodded. The wind changed, and the inferno in John died down. Ironheart looked across at the tower where his friend was, with Koira and Balindar, hoping to subdue Lot Ionan.
Fracas, let them succeed, he prayed,
and looked at Baladil, who was kneeling next to the body of his dead comrade, muttering a prayer which, if he had heard aright, the Zadar was also addressing to the god Fracas. Keenfire struck Sisseroth in the right shoulder, knocking him off his feet and onto his back. The elf hurtled down several steps until he came slithering to a halt. Fighting for breath, Balindar ran up to Sisseroth to finish him off. The elf was just struggling upright, Keenfire still embedded in his shoulder, dark blood streaming from the wound and down over his armor. Balindar opened his mouth in a yell and vaulted forward, gripping the hilt of Sisseroth's sword, ready to use it, and holding on to the parrying stick. Sisseroth attempted to dodge, but his own blade caught him in the groin. It pierced the armor with a grinding noise, and he screamed out in agony. Balindar laughed and grabbed Keenfire by the haft.
That's the sound for me!
He snatched the axe back while Sisseroth tried a final stab at his throat, but the dwarf cut his head clean off his shoulders. A fountain of blood shot up all the way to the vaulted ceiling, and the decapitated elf fell back down the stairs. Still gasping for air, Balindar had to sit down. He felt dizzy, and his limbs were like lead. He could hardly move. Keenfire weighed more than 4 full sacks of gold. A shadow fell on him. It was Lot Ionan, staring down at him, a malicious smile on his lips. Balindar thought there was no earthly chance of stopping the Magus if he wanted to kill them all. He felt exhausted. Tungdil was nowhere to be seen, and Coira presented no danger to the man.
"Don't even think of it,"
he threatened Lot Ionan, nevertheless. The Magus seemed to shake his fingers, and suddenly a blue flame shimmered over to Balindar, creeping inside his mouth and nose. A warmth overcame him. It felt like being granted shelter, love, and joy. His body received new strength and his wounds tickled and fizzed. When these sensations ceased, he saw that his skin where the injuries had been was now without blemish, as if he had never been touched by a sword. Lot Ionan passed him by without a further glance. Meanwhile, Coira, groaning, struggled to sit up, holding her head. She saw the dead elf, then Balindar, and followed the Magus with her eyes until he had disappeared down the spiral staircase.
"What happened?"
"A lot," the dwarf replied crisply, getting to his feet. He felt as if he had slept through half an orbit and was awakening refreshed. Lot Ionan had kept to his side of the bargain and healed him.
"And a small miracle, too. Come on, let's find Goldhand."
Together, they hurried down the tower steps. Tungdil Goldhand lay in his rigid armor next to an exhausted Millennia by the campfire a mile north of the crater. Lot Ionan had transported the paralyzed dwarf out of Dion and up into the plateau by magic, while Coira had ministered to the wounded of their party with her remaining powers. She was not able to restore the blood that Millennia had lost, and thus the freedom fighter was as weak as a little child. Rodario looked after her tenderly, but they knew Millennia could not accompany them any longer. Speed was of the essence on their journey, and she could not travel. They planned to leave her to be cared for at the nearest farmstead. She would follow on as soon as she was sufficiently recovered. Ironheart pushed Tungdil's visor up and rubbed his beard thoughtfully.
"So, this time it was the elf?"
"Yes. He recited a formula."
Tungdil tried to lift his arm.
"Nothing."
Baladil stood on the far side and uttered some strange dark words. Not a single rune shone out. He shrugged his shoulders regretfully and stomped back to the fire. Ironheart grinned and raised his crow's beak.
"You know what that means."
"Yes," replied his friend roughly, "and I don't like it."
"Wait," called Coira. "Do we know what kind of phrase was used?"
Ironheart explained concisely what had happened the previous time, leaving out any details that the Maga did not need to know. Her face became thoughtful.
"But if the Zadar could not help this time, it won't have been the same phrase."
She leaned over Tungdil and asked,
"Can you give us any hint?"
Ironheart suspected Tungdil had not told him the whole truth when relating the origins and peculiarities of the suit of armor.
"Perhaps on purpose,"
buzzed the lonely doubter inside his head.
"He didn't want you to know where he is vulnerable. And look where that has got him." "He'd be able to tell me now," he told the doubting voice.
Unfortunately, he said it out loud, causing Coria to look surprised.
"Nothing important. I was talking to myself," said Ironheart,
motioning Coira to step aside.
"Right there. Mind out,"
he bellowed for everyone's benefit.
"There'll be lightning flashes, so shield your eyes or look the other way."
He positioned himself, legs wide apart, over Tungdil, lifted his weapon, and slammed it down using the flat side like he had done before, in the Outer Lands. There was a dull thud, and Tungdil groaned. Despite its hardness, the Tionium showed a dent in the breastplate.
"What is wrong, for Vrakus's sake?"
Ironheart swung the crow's beak up again and tensed the muscles in his upper body to put all his strength into the next blow.
"You'll start next time I touch you."
Another crash, and the armor buckled and dented again. But no flash ensued, and the armor lost none of its rigidity. Tungdil groaned and gasped.
"Charming! We're in trouble here,"
remarked Slynn, superfluously.
I can see that,
snarled Ironheart.
Does it hurt a lot, Scholar?
He asked kindly.
Only when I laugh,
coughed the dwarf.
Don't hit me again, Ironheart. Or if you do, aim somewhere else, or I'll suffocate.
I think the elf has turned off the magic, except for the safety cutout.
Ironheart ran his fingers over the dents in the metal.
All this hammering is no help at all.
We must get a cart for him, Rodario suggested. And that way, since we'll only be going slowly, we can take Millennia along too.
No, protested Tungdil. We'll find a way to force the armor to wake up, and we'll do it tonight.
Well, charming, murmured Slynn. Why doesn't Balandar have a go with Keenfire?
Has the sense of all your ancestors completely deserted you? You might as well shoot him in the eye, said Ironheart. It could kill him.
How so? Asked Balandar. He is not one of our enemies. He got to his feet at the campfire, chucked away the rabbit bones he had been gnawing at, and picked up his axe. As always, the inlay pattern and diamonds glowed, giving off a faint sheen.
Let's see. Or has anybody got any objections?
Slynn and Ironheart exchanged glances.
Even Tungdil remained silent. Chapter 30. The Outer Lands. The Black Abyss. Early Summer 6492nd Solar Cycle. As they rode up to the Evil Dam Fortress, they saw flags and banners wafting proudly in the wind. But the walls had suffered damage. Ironheart turned to Tungdil, who, with Lot Ionan's help, was now able to move again in his armor.
What can have been happening?
He recalled how the Magus, recently, had maliciously let them all spend the whole night puzzling over the frozen armor, before getting up at dawn, executing two swift gestures, and throwing a dark purple veil over the Tionium. After that, the armor had worked perfectly, even repairing the dents to its own bodywork, whereas previously it had failed to respond even to Keenfire. The Magus gave no explanation for what he had done, not even to his foster son. Afterwards, everything had moved fast. They had left Millennia and Rodario back at a farmstead and headed off in a breathless gallop toward the Brown Mountains, crossing directly through to the Outer Lands. They stopped for nothing and were answerable to no one. Tungdil was High King and did not have to justify his actions. His word was law. Ironheart glanced at the Magus.
We're going to have trouble with him.
Tungdil also noted the cracks in the fortress walls. As long as Evil Dam is still standing, we have not lost, he said, relief in his voice. The most important thing is that we aren't too late. Trumpets heralded their approach. A detachment of Ubariu and dwarves marched out to accompany the High King's troop, as behoved their status, leading them to the tower, now newly equipped with additional supports, while the garrison cheered. Ironheart saw many more children of the smith on the battlements than expected.
Are my eyes deceiving me?
He asked Slynn, drawing his attention to the soldiers.
No. There are some standards up there I don't recognize.
Or perhaps these are banners you never wanted to see, Balandar added.
Those are the Thirdling clans.
By fracas, said Ironheart in astonishment. So they've come to support us?
He turned to Tungdil.
Your own tribe has come to lend arms to the High King.
He laughed in relief. It was a good trick choosing the one-eyed dwarf as High King, Balandar muttered.
It wasn't a trick, protested Ironheart angrily. It was...
There's Goda, Slynn interrupted. Are you going to greet your wife, General? Or shall I do it for you?
Ironheart reined in his pony, jumped off and ran to his spouse, embracing her, even letting go of his crow's beak for once to do so. I'm holding all the happiness of the world in my arms, he whispered in her ear, feeling his throat constrict. I have missed you so, Goda.
She hid her face in his shoulder and pressed him to her.
At last, she murmured. I nearly died of worry and couldn't let the others see.
She looked at Tungdil, still on his horse, and saw Lot Ionan beside him.
You've done it.
It was easier than we'd thought, he told her, freeing himself from the embrace. Let's talk about it inside. There is a great deal to tell.
Here, too.
She looked him straight in the eyes.
Sadly, none of it good, my husband.
Anxiously, Ironheart hurried to reach the conference hall. The dwarves, Koira, and Lot Ionan followed, and Goda gave the order to fetch their guests. On all sides, dwarves knelt in homage to Tungdil, proffering their weapons to him as a mark of respect and unconditional obedience. Ironheart could tell Goda did not appreciate this gesture.
Well, there's a surprise.
The rejoicing in Evildam was unstinting. From the other three gates came bugle calls and the clatter of axes on shields. A storm of euphoria broke over them, with everyone involved in the celebration, dwarves, humans, undergroundlings, and Ubariu alike. Ironheart walked tall and proud as never before. Back straight, crowsbeak shouldered, legs splayed, he waved at the crowds, a smile on his face. It was the same for Slynn and Balindar. They relished being treated as heroes, and rightly so. Only his wife's stony expression troubled the warrior's mood, but only slightly. The double doors leading to the conference chamber were opened for them by the Ubariu sentries. Ironheart's jaw dropped. Dwarves were seated at the table. Dozens of dwarves, all of them clan leaders. And the flags that hung on the walls behind them denoted which delegates had come.
By Vrakus, he exclaimed, his heart racing with joy. Scholar, do you see that?
He wanted to grab him by the shoulder and shake him wildly in his excitement, but he thought better of it.
Stay near me, all of you, Tungdil told his friends quietly. I want them to remember the faces of their greatest heroes forever.
He walked in, slow and dignified. A clanking and clattering sounded out as the dwarves knelt before their High King, holding up their swords in the age-old oath of allegiance. All the tribes were represented. Even the Thirdlings and Freelings had come to pledge fealty and to follow Tungdil's command. Nobody spoke. It was a weighty moment, the greatest event in the history of the Children of the Smith. The impressive sight brought tears to Ironheart's eyes. His scholar had achieved what no High King before him had ever accomplished. He was not ashamed of the salty drops on his cheeks, and he could see the same emotion on the faces of many gathered there.
Long live High King Tungdil Goldhand!
He shouted, raising his crow's beak before falling on one knee. Affected by the spectacle, Slynn and Balindar followed suit. Goda was the last to bow the knee to the one-eyed dwarf.
You have responded to my call!
Tungdil raised his deep voice, covering the audience with the essence of his royal authority.
For this, I thank you. The definitive battle for Girdlegard will be fought in the Black Abyss, because the war that started 250 cycles ago has not yet ended.
He let his gaze wander over the assembled dwarves.
This is why I have returned, to help my people.
That's a lie, hissed Goda,
but only Ironheart heard her. He flashed his eyes in warning, and she bit her lip.
You can see that I have changed, but in my heart I am still a child of the smith. Without my friends,
and he gestured toward the dwarves behind him,
my first task would never have succeeded. It is clearer than ever now that we will meet the second challenge triumphantly.
He indicated to the assembly that all should rise.
I bear the title of High King because the Fourthlings and Fifthlings elected me. Many may see it as a fault that I was not chosen by all the tribes.
Tungdil raised his arms.
I ask you, each and every one of you, every clan leader and every king, for this very reason once more. Do you wish me to lead you?
The thunder of agreement made the room rock, and Ironheart felt a jolt to his spine.
Such unity!
Tungdil bowed to the dwarves.
I swear that I shall serve my folk, and that you shall never regret your choice.
Then he turned his brown eye to the Thirdlings.
Step forward, King of the Thirdlings, and announce what we have agreed.
To Ironheart's surprise, Rognor Mortalblow stepped back and gave way to a familiar figure.
Hagarin Deathbringer! He exclaimed.
He had not expected that. The sturdy dwarf placed both hands on his belt.
My name is feared as leader of the Black Squadron, but my deeds served but one goal. To allow my tribe to survive in the hope that an opportunity like today would arrive, when we could sit with our brothers and our sisters round one table. And fight evil, he declared. Rognor was my chancellor, carrying out my commands. He would have given his life for me if the Alfar had attacked, aiming to kill the king of the Thirdlings.
He pointed to Balodil.
And it was by my orders that courageous warriors transformed themselves into Zadar, to learn the secrets of the Alfar and deploy their own tricks against them.
The first decent Thirdling. Apart from the scholar.
Ironheart listened agog, like all the others present in the chamber.
We have made preparations, and we are sick, Hagarin went on. We are sick of fighting our own brothers and sisters. Even though it would have been easy to eradicate the remaining tribes, because we are superior in number, and because, thanks to the Invisibles, we knew the secrets of all of the strongholds. We would not have attacked you. It was enough to know we could have defeated you had we so wished.
He took a deep breath.
I, Hagarin Deathbringer, of the clan of Deathbringers, now declare the blood feud ended between us and the other dwarves of Girdlegard, whether they belong to a tribe or designate themselves as free. No dwarf need go in fear of his or her life when entering the Black Mountains or on meeting one of us.
He tapped his weapon.
This shall never taste dwarf blood. I swear by Vrakus. We are a united folk, all children of the Smith.
Ironheart stood thunderstruck. He looked at Tungdil, then at Goda, and finally at Hagarin.
Peace? He mumbled. The Thirdlings are making peace with us?
Hagarin smiled at him.
Peace,
he affirmed. In that moment, anyone could have heard the fall of a sparrow's tail feather. The kings and clan leaders stared at Hagarin and his delegation. They had heard the words, but as yet did not believe them. Ironheart knew how they felt. He, too, was speechless. The prospect of hundreds, no thousands more cycles of warfare and hatred had been removed with those few sentences, and no endless negotiations had been necessary. All made possible by a single dwarf. Tungdil Goldhand.
That is his great achievement, he thought. There will be no greater High King to come after him. There will be statues showing him as the bringer of unification. Desperate returnee has become unassailable warrior and High King of all the tribes.
Ironheart's breathing sped up with the excitement, and when nobody in the chamber voiced a response, he cried out,
Smash us with the sacred hammer of Vrakus!
Is no one going to cheer?"
A hurricane of voices broke out, assailing the ears and outdoing the thunder of jubilation they had heard on entering the fortress. Dwarves on all sides shouted out in joy and relief, waving weapons in the air and running up to the thirdlings, not to attack them, but to shake hands. Tungdil remained where he was, Bloodthirster in one hand, the other on his hip, smiling as he surveyed the scene. Ironheart could contain himself no longer. He embraced his friend with a laugh, slapping him on the back over and over.
"You were amazing, scholar. Without you, old friend, none of this would have been possible," the one-eyed dwarf replied, holding out his hand.
Then he turned to Slynn, Baladil, and Balindar.
"Without each and every one of you, it would not have been possible. You all shared in our success."
Finally, he turned to address the assembly.
"We can celebrate later," he said, waiting for quiet. "Let us think now of those who have given their lives in this mission and have been welcomed into the eternal forge of Vrakas."
To Ironheart's astonishment, Tungdil reeled off every single name of the fallen, from the dwarves to the Zadar.
"And now," he said to Goda, "I want to hear what has happened here since we have been gone."
The Maegar made her report. She told of the attack the monsters had launched, of their own counterattack, the appearance of the enemy Magus, the abduction of her daughter, the injury to her son. She told of all the events round the Black Abyss. Ironheart's euphoric mood plummeted, and concern for his children made him start to his feet. But Goda held him back with her eyes, warning him not to leave the assembly.
"They are both safe now. Go and see them when the audience is over," she told him. "There has been no change since my daughter escaped and returned to us. The monsters have rebuilt their towers taller than before. Their camp has now regained its former size," she summed up. "But there has been no sighting of their Magus."
Tungdil nodded.
"You have heard now why we need Lotionan to combat the dwarf who calls himself Vrakas. In the cycles I spent in the Black Abyss, I made him my mortal enemy. But I assure you, he would have broken out some time or other, even without my provocation. His thirst for power is insatiable."
He had them bring out the scale model of the ravine, which showed the locations of all the tents and towers.
"He is our prime target. Once he is dead, the beasts will lose heart. Then it will be an easy fight, and we will be in a position to make the rocks collapse on top of them, making sure no evil ever escapes again." "When do we start fighting?"
Hargrain asked, puzzling over the model.
"In two orbits' time. I need to rest after my journey."
Tungdil tapped the glass dome that represented the barrier. It shattered.
"Lotionan will do that for us, and he will ride into battle at my side. We'll finish the monsters off, and as soon as the dwarf Magus notices he's nearing defeat, he'll come out."
He gave the assembled kings a piercing warning look and urged them,
"No one is to confront him. He belongs to me and Lotionan. No one else could stop him. Goda has already described his power. Nobody would stand a chance."
"Apart from me,"
interrupted Balindar. He pulled Keenfire out of its sheath and showed it to the assembly. A loud murmur ran through the crowd.
"The weapon which vanquished the demon, which defeated Nadon and many of Gerdlegard's foes, has returned to its own kind, and it will serve us once more." "The diamonds are glowing," one of the dwarves called out in alarm. "Who is among us? The axe is trying to warn us."
The Zadar stepped forward.
"It's me," he chuckled. "I may look like a dwarf, but I changed ages ago. The Alphar implanted the seed of evil in me,
but I used its power to do good. That, he whistles softly, indicating Keenfire, is why it is sparkling so nicely. It can sense my presence.
Goda looked at Tungdil and was about to say something, but Ironheart gestured emphatically to her to keep silent. He guessed she was going to cast new doubts on the integrity of the scholar.
Not now, he mouthed.
He is the last of his kind, said Tungdil. His friends and comrades have all fallen, fighting the good fight and giving their lives for Girdlegard. With his help, we can find and kill every last Alf, wherever he may be hiding, as soon as we have our victory here in the Outer Lands.
The assembled dwarves applauded or clattered their weapons on the table.
Then go back to your warriors and tell them what is to happen the orbit after next. And take your rest.
The High King bowed his head to them.
Vrakus will be with you.
Turning, he nodded to Ironheart and left the chamber. Goda came over to her husband.
You heard it.
What?
Vrakus will be with us.
She watched Tungdil's retreating back.
But who is with him?
Oh, come now, Goda,
Ironheart sighed and shook his head. He left her standing there and went to see his children. One orbit later, when Ironheart had stretched out for a nap, there was a knock at the door and a messenger asked him to go to the conference chamber. The High King had summoned him. Ironheart made his way there as quickly as he could. He was thinking through the next orbit's battle. Evildam echoed to the sound of blades being sharpened on whetstones and the clink of hammer on metal where armor was being repaired. Final preparations were underway. They were agreed on tactics. Nothing would be changed now. He worried less about himself and his own survival. He was concerned for Sander in particular.
I would give anything for her to recover from what has happened.
While his injured son was obviously getting better, he had seen in his daughter's eyes that Sander had not got over her treatment in captivity. He had noticed a similar effect in Koira, who had still not recovered from her near-death experience at Sisyroth's hands. For this reason, he had put the two of them together, hoping they would share confidences and help each other. Balindar was another problem. Ironheart feared the Fithling might do something reckless with Keenfire, endangering the outcome for the dwarves. The looks that Balindar and Goda had exchanged were almost conspiratorial. It would be no use trying to talk sense to his spouse. She had made up her mind and was not going to change it. All Tungdil's achievements meant nothing to her.
Vrakus, why did you make us so stubborn?
He complained under his breath before going down the corridor that led to the conference chamber. Koira was also on her way there. He lifted his arm in greeting, and she slowed her pace. She was wearing a dark blue robe with long sleeves and a black cap on her head. Ironheart recognized Weyand's coat of arms in the embroidery on the sleeves.
How are you, Majesty?
Well, thank you, she smiled. You'll be wanting to know if I've spoken to your daughter?
Ironheart tilted his head and his braid fell forward.
I am so worried about her. She's so low and seems very confused, so different.
Koira frowned. Have your wife's suspicions taken hold of you, too?
What suspicions?
That it is not really your daughter.
Ironheart threw up his hands.
Is she saying that? First it was the scholar she had doubts about, and now she thinks her own daughter has been replaced. It's persecution mania.
Yes, yes,
said Koira mildly, to calm the dwarf down. It obviously is your daughter. She has told me many personal details.
She stopped at the door. She has endured the most terrible thing that a woman can ever go through. The dwarf that abducted her announced his intentions and put the blame squarely on Goda for not accepting his conditions. Her spirit has been damaged by the thought of this betrayal. She placed her hand on his shoulder. I can do nothing.